Hi, I'm Bea, storyteller of CCA Manila. I'm joined by the most enthusiastic Chef Philip John Golding, culinary director of CCA Manila. We are now on our third episode of The Secret Sauce, the first podcast in the Philippines for those with culinary dreams. We will be talking to chefs, foodies, food entrepreneurs, and anyone passionate about the culinary world. You will learn the habits of successful people in and out of the kitchen. Today, we are with Chef Migar Rizon, who runs the Savoy Hotel in Melbourne. We find out what it takes to succeed overseas, and check this out, this is our hot take. It takes persistence and hard work. This is a conversation you need if you are thinking of working overseas. All right. So hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. This is probably our third episode of The Secret Sauce, where we try to interview chefs all over the world and people in our CCA community and just see what they're up to and find out if there's a secret sauce or not. Chef Migo, do you think there's a secret sauce to people's success or no?
Of course there is. There's always is a secret sauce.
What's yours? If you could narrow it down to something, what would you say?
Passion.
Yes. Passion.
Passion is for everything.
It's very hard to have passion, I think. Sometimes it's like, especially now during COVID, the resilience is tested so much. I guess I'll start off by asking you, how did you start your career as a chef?
I started my career, actually, I graduated from CCA 2004, thankfully for Chef Philip passed me for a compre. and then after that, my first job was for Kai Japanese restaurant.
Yeah,
it's a very funky restaurant, and it still is. Shout out to Chef Gilbert. He's an awesome chef. And then after that, I sort of took over for KKK restaurant or K3 restaurant. And then I was, I did a lot of, what do you call this? I did a lot of events for other resorts like Club Noah. I also taught culinary arts. And then I guess the best thing that happened was when I was actually picked through like a market we had a market basket competition style, and they were going to pick two chefs to get a chance to work in Australia. So I was fortunate enough to actually be one of them. And 2011, I moved to Australia. I first moved to a regional city called Townsville. And then I worked there for a bit. And then I moved to another regional coastal town in New South Wales called Coffs Harbour. Worked there for a golf resort. It was actually a hatted restaurant. So it was like a fine dining restaurant in a resort. And then I was, I applied for the executive chef position of DoubleTree by Hilton in Melbourne, which fortunately enough, I got it. And and then the rest is history, I guess.
And right now you're working in one of my favorite places. Melbourne is so close to my heart. Like, I grew up there in my kind of 20s. And now you're working for the Savoy, right?
Yes,
Tell us a little bit about that.
Savoy Hotel is actually a very iconic hotel here in Melbourne. I think it was built during the 1960s, and it's still standing at the moment. I think one of the most popular, more popular chefs did in Australia did his apprenticeship here. Curtis Stone, if you know.
Oh yes, he's a lovely guy. He has all the grocery commercials.
Yes, from Kohl's.
Yes.
So yeah, he started his career here, and yeah, there's a lot of history in this hotel, and you know, I'm just happy to be here and share what a Filipino chef can bring to the hotel.
I wonder, you know, a lot of people nowadays are thinking of moving out of the country, mm-hmm. Especially chefs. They're really looking outside, especially how, I guess, the Philippines has handled COVID. I think people are anxious to stay here to see a future and themselves. What's your advice for people that want to move to Melbourne? As I know some students that are already thinking of going to Australia.
Well, arguably, Melbourne is considered the food capital of Australia and probably one of the best places to be in as a chef. So I would suggest that they would, if they could, they should. I've opened, the Melbourne actually opened a lot of doors, or opened my eyes to, you know, the produce here is good. There's a lot of brilliant chefs that you can learn from. Yeah, so, you know, they say that the best place to hone your skill, or the best way to hone your skill, is to travel and to try new things. So I guess if you're in Melbourne, you don't really need to travel because everything is here already. So I know I'm a bit biased, but you know, I think Bea can attest to how beautiful Melbourne it is and how you know, culinarily diverse it is.
Yeah,
as a city.
You can get Vietnamese food, Indian food. I mean, Chef Philip is a fan of all these like cuisines as well, and I think he would understand if he, you know, travels next year maybe to Melbourne. I think Chef Philip, you should find a way. But as in your career as a chef, you've cooked for a lot of people. What was the most memorable for you?
Most memorable would be, because I might sound a bit sentimental here, but you know, cooking for family is the best. You know, it's especially now that I'm away from them. Yeah. I guess, you know, because I don't get to see them or be with them, and cooking for them when I'm back, when I visit the Philippines, is, you know, yeah, memorable.
Okay, let's go to the opposite side. Have you ever bombed a food event?
Always? No, just kidding. yes, I have.
Tell us more.
It was actually back in the Philippines when I used to be a very young chef that thought that it could rule the world or conquer the world. It was a 700 people event, and I thought that I could have, and me and my team actually prepped for it for one day, and because I thought I could do it,
pull it off,
you know, but yeah, it taught me. That was a very humbling experience, because you know, it took us literally 24 hours to do it. You know, it was 11 different canapes for 700 people. So
wow.
I didn't know what I was thinking when I thought that we could have pulled it off to prep for one day, but yeah. And thankfully.
So you were in the weeds.
Yes,
I've heard that a lot. In the every day feels
literally
like
for it. Yeah, since the first moment I stepped into the kitchen until the time when we were delivering the food already. It was like, yeah. No.
How did the client react?
Thankfully they were okay about it. Okay. Like but obviously my chefs were a bit disappointed, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, disappointed about my leadership, maybe. And yeah, it's not so much about bombing the event, it's so much about bombing the actual chemistry that we had in the kitchen, which is I think is important as well. So yeah, a lot of chefs actually left during that time, but you know, the few that stayed are still good mates of mine. So yeah.
Loyalty in the kitchen is so rare, and it's something you should keep when you find it. In considering that, what is the true definition of a chef for you, Chef Migo?
It's a good question. I think it's... I saw this post from Sandra Tolentino, one of my batchmates from CCA, and it stuck. It stuck to me because it said that a cook can tell you what goes on or goes in that recipe or that dish, but a chef can tell you why. So yeah, I guess that's a good definition of what a chef is. Chef is, you know, he knows why this particular ingredient goes well with this particular ingredient and why I need to use asparagus because it's in season or something like that. So yeah.
Wow. Chef Philip, what do you think?
About the inspiration of the chef, I think that the chef himself, right? And we always say that we try to be good cooks, and I think that's the fundamental basis roots of what we are, is really the cooking side. But the why is the biggest question of all, which is really why we go to culinary college, is to be educated and understand the whys, which is so, so important in our job. And I also think that chef translated is manager or leader. So there are some great cooks out there, but they'll never be great leaders. And likewise, there's some great chefs out there, which sometimes are not great cooks, right? Yeah. But if you put that leadership into the spin and you put the right chemistry together, like you just said, Migs, is that working ethic of a team. Without the team, there's no I in team. A kitchen is run by different parts of hierarchy in the kitchen. And when that is in tune, like an orchestra, right, everything comes together, and it's great when you get those teams, and they come and go, and it's sad to see when people move on, but that's inevitable in our industry, because people have to grow. But it is great to see the chemistry in a kitchen, and when you get awesome chemistry, you get awesome food and awesome product. So, and congratulations, Migs, for making that step to another country and flying the flag and out there cooking. We're very proud of you.
Thank you. It's all because of CCA.
Go ahead, Chef Philip. I know you have a couple of questions.
Okay, here we go. So, okay, I'm going to fire these questions at you. So what makes a good and what makes a bad dish for you?
A good dish is, for me, done with love, done with passion, and simple. Not to, you know... you know, because sometimes chefs tend to overthink and think they visualize the dish first before actually understanding what the dish lacks, if you know what I mean. Like, yes, it's true that, you know, you eat first with your eyes, but, you know, once you think that the dish is lovely, but once you taste it, it's subpar. Then I guess, you know, that's the whole reason why that's what the whole reason why we cook, is for people to enjoy the food, not through looking at it, but through, you know, tasting it and enjoying it. So a good dish would be, you know, something simple, something that has all the elements, ticks all the boxes. A bad dish is probably something that would, that you, for example, if you have a 700 person function and you do it for one day, that would be a bad dish. So, based on experience.
I think you remember CCA, we when you were there, we started drawing dishes before we even executed, right? Our pencil case was imperative to actually draw, get the colors in. You know, I picked that up in France when I was an apprentice, but the Philippines was about colors, because in the Philippines, we had a lot of brown, brown, and brown, right, with the cuisine. But it was nice to see that a lot of the younger chefs were starting to color and draw the dish and to really walk through and think through the dish before we actually executed the dish. And you're quite right that a number of chefs overcomplicate their plating, right? So keep it simple, keep it accurate. I think restraint in plating and cooking, just three or four movements, is where you really see a chef at his or her finest, rather than eight elements and gardens of ash and onion ash and stuff like that, right? We do go for our yearly trends, right, or try and be ahead. But I would agree with you totally that keep it simple, right? Those are the best dishes. What were you like in your earlier days when you were still learning at the CCA? So, I mean, in the earlier days, what were you like as a person?
One of my favorite questions, because it's always like a little smile. Like, I feel like everyone's a bit of trouble.
Do you mean when I actually go to school, or no, just kidding? I actually attend the class.
Where were you outside of class?
I think that's a longer. We need a much more time to explain that. No, but seriously, I went to CCA because I loved to cook and I wanted to become a chef. Ever since I was 7 or 9 years old, I knew that I wanted to become a chef. So, and at that time I was young, you know, there was a lot of temptations around CCA. So I wasn't really that diligent student, but I knew that I was sort of like mayabang before.
you echo Jasper and Kerwin. Jasper and Kerwin said the same yesterday, right? So you know what we had to deal with, right? A lot of no, that's why we were tough on you guys. But no.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I thought I was the best chef ever. You know, I thought that I was better than all the students in that campus. but I don't know. Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't, but no, just kidding. No. So to put it plainly.
Okay.
Did we get cut?
Yeah, we should ask Jasper at one time. So she's in and out, but I'm sure she'll be bouncing back in. What advice would you give to culinary students? What advice would you give to culinary students?
Don't be mayabang. No, just
it's funny you echoed that, because other people we've interviewed, right, that went to CCA said the same thing, right? Said that, a bit cocky, a bit, you know, full of themselves. But it's great to see, you know, 15, 20, 25 years on, how you guys now reflect and you know 25 years ago, 20 years ago. I love that. It's humbling. It's nice to see that you look back and, you know, you. So So what advice would you give to students now?
I think it's
make their mark.
It needs to. You need to take your career in like baby steps. So it's not as if once you graduate, you can call yourself a chef or you can run a kitchen already. It takes time. It takes effort, and it takes a lot of hard work as well. Like looking back to the things I had to do in order for me to become who I am today, it's very humbling.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm very proud of what I've accomplished. And do not take the CCA education for granted, because it will propel you or will help you to be what you want to be as a chef. Because for me, it was a big advantage, learning the basics, learning the fundamentals of culinary arts totally helped.
Fundamentals, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So mistakes and failures are a great learning experience. You shared your 700 canopy party. I love that. That's brilliant. All those big ones, right? So mistakes and failures are great learning experiences, but what would be the most profound failure that changed you? And would you mind sharing that and how maybe a certain incident changed your reflection on where you are today, who you are today, and your food philosophy?
I guess it's not so much about mistakes, it's about a realization that there are other more experienced chefs out there that will do better food than you. So I guess it's just that, just be happy of what, I'm not saying to be contented because, you learn every day and you grow every day, but I'm at this point in my career now that I am comfortable in what I can produce and what I want to produce, and not deviate just because I think this chef is better than me. I would want to copy him or his technique. It's just me being who I want to be and me sharing what I want my guests to experience and what my cuisine is.
That's great. You found your zone. So, saying that, in your plan, did you think that where you are today was achievable, and where you're going to, you're obviously very happy with where you are now, but a few years back, did you think that you could reach that level of happiness of finding peace with yourself in the kitchen? And
I guess my the cockiness inside me said yes. But it's, I guess in life you really need to be a bit, you need to believe in yourself. So especially in a foreign country where, it's good and it's bad, because being in a foreign country is no one knows you, so you can start from scratch and it's sort of like a clean slate. But B, the drawback is being in a foreign country, you don't know anyone and you don't have that support. So I guess it's a bit of good and bad, because in my experience, it was me trying to make a name for myself, but doing it on my own because I didn't have the support. I didn't have anyone. I do now, but at first, Yeah. So it's basically fending everything by myself and, you know, making, you know, flying that Philippine flag in that, in all the kitchens that I work in. Because, you know, when I was young, my dream was to showcase what the Filipino cuisine is and what Filipino chefs can bring to the table. So
yeah,
I'm thankful now that I can actually achieve that. I am slowly starting to achieve that with within Melbourne. So yeah, I think I deviated.
We're so proud of you.
Okay, so we'll move on. Yeah. We'll move on to Bear's question. But just to pick up on that, is that over the years, I think, you know, when you arrived in Australia, you were pretty much on your own in terms of chef organizations. But, yes, you know, with the digitized process now and with what we started in the Philippines in terms of Scoffier and ACF and stuff like that, I think now it's really happening in terms of globally sharing. And of course, with the digital process now, it's easier for us to communicate and share and do the masterclasses and stuff like that. So I think that, yeah, you were pretty much alone as leaving, say, the country 10 years ago. But I think in the last 3 or 4 years, the world has become a smaller place. So I know when I left the UK 25 years ago and then came to the Philippines, I felt very similar. I felt very alone. And that's why I try to establish organizations and chef mentorship organizations. So I can feel for you for that. It is a kind of lonely journey, but I think it's changing now with the next generation of chefs coming up. So yeah, Bea's back in the window.
A little bit. Today is a turbulent day in the
mountains. No problem. So, okay, we're turning over to you.
No, I was just talking about, I was thinking about what you were saying, Chef Miko, that you are trying to introduce Filipino cuisine in Melbourne, and it's kind of like the great melting pots of where you can introduce that, because they're so accepting of different cuisines.
Yes.
I just wonder, like, what is probably the most pivotal moment in your career, considering that you're already slowly doing that in your standard, but I feel like you've achieved so much already. What was that moment that really pivoted you to go, okay, I kind of know my why?
Well, actually, it happened recently when I moved to Melbourne from Coffs Harbour, because obviously in Coffs Harbour or in Townsville, I couldn't actually execute what I wanted to execute, because it's such a small town and people are more, close-minded when it comes to different cuisines. So as soon as I moved to Melbourne, 2019, that was my goal in Platform 270, which is the restaurant of the DoubleTree by Hilton there, here in Melbourne. So and I slowly introduced Filipino food. Like I had sisig in my menu, but I placed it in an entree. It was an entree. Placed it in a tostada with a garlic and yogurt emulsion and stuff like that. And then for mains, I actually had crispy para, which was actually received well. I had chicken barbecue, the Filipino style chicken barbecue using banana ketchup, but I, you know, partnered it with Brussels sprouts just so there's familiarity in it. And so it was actually that moment when I said to myself that, oh, people are, you know, are accepting what Filipino cuisine is. And you could tell from all the reviews that we had in the hotel that they truly enjoyed the aspect of the dishes and stuff that had the Filipino flavors and stuff. So yeah,
I'm so proud of you. Like, I think it's such a great thing to combine what is unfamiliar to what is familiar in a certain, you know, customer base. And it's really a lot of creativity that entails. And I always wonder, what do you do when you first wake up?
Actually, even when I'm sleeping, I dream about food. So,
okay.
So yeah, it's when I wake up, it's I don't want to say. Obviously, I say a prayer, like thank God that you know, it's a brand new day, and you know, thank God that I spend more time, an additional day with my family here, my two daughters and stuff like that. So, and then I think about what I need to do for that day. So, so the moment I wake up, I thank God. And then I switch back on to my being a chef.
the mise en place and the prep and all the things you have to do.
Yeah. One of my chefs called in sick, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
You love those morning things in hospitality where someone calls in like, really? Yeah. You couldn't just, you know the shifts. Just be healthy today. But that's part of being a leader, I think, and managing a team. And how do you stay creative then? How do you get the juices flowing, whether you're, you know, your dishes, like when you talk about Brussels sprouts and chicken barbecue, crispy pata, sisig and a tostada, like it's not very common in this country to have that. How do you get your creativity going?
Thankfully, we live in a digital age. So, you know, Instagram posts from different chefs are a good way for you to get inspired. Not so much copying it, you know, ingredient by per ingredient, but you know, it's good. It's refreshing to see what other chefs do and what you can pick from those dishes. Also, you know, eating out regularly. I'm not saying you eat in a fancy restaurant, because you know, all places, even in food courts, you can find inspiration with regards to flavor profile and everything like that. And also just talking to chefs. You know, I actually have a good Filipino chef friend here who is he actually was a finalist of San Pellegrino back a couple of years ago. So we actually, you know, bounce around ideas and stuff. It's actually good, because there's a lot of young Filipino chefs here that want to introduce Filipino food. And there's a group called, I don't know, I think Bea met them before, the Entre Pinays. So the Entre
Pinays. Oh, yeah, they're amazing. Yeah,
So the Entre Pinays actually helped propel all the group together, all the talented Filipino chefs that want a voice or want to introduce our cuisine. And you know, we do live Instagram live demos or cooking demos, and they actually did like pop-ups as well here that showcase Filipino food, which is being received quite well. So yeah,
I love that, because it's like you feed on a community that, you know, you have a common interest of your Filipino roots, and it's trying to push yourself, because I know some of you have lived in Melbourne or Australia for a while, and being, I guess, putting the creativity together feeds off and produces, like snowballs the effect of being creative. In your life, what's the best advice you've ever received?
From Eminem, it goes, no matter how many fish in the sea, it'd be so empty without me.
You know what? I did hear, I was listening to a podcast, and a guy was talking about how much he loves 8 Mile, which 8 Mile is such a great film. And yeah. M&M's fantastic. So I get what you're saying. Okay, Chef Philip, I'm sure you have more things you want to ask.
Okay, quick fire questions, right? Yeah. What is the best habit you've trained yourself to do? Habit you've trained yourself to do. What's the best habit that you have trained yourself to do?
Time management.
Time management. Brilliant. Okay. Yeah. Do you believe in luck? Do you believe in luck?
No.
Why?
Because I believe in
you make your own luck.
Old-fashioned, good, old, hard work.
Hard work. Love it. How do you overcome roadblocks?
You punch through.
Okay. You face a little prayer here and there.
Yeah. That's prayer, and you know, you just have to truck on.
Yeah. Look up and look for some guidance. Define success.
Success is seeing your family happy and contented.
Love it. That's great. Who do you look up to?
My mom and my dad.
That's a really good
very good emotional answer, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, family values are so important in our culture, right? And it's something you would never really forget, the loyalty or filial loyalty you have. And although that's a lot of our past and our history, you always bring it with you. We'll go a little bit forward. Chef Migo, what do you think is the future of food?
Future of food. I think it's going to be more of back to basics. There still will be those molecular gastronomy type of food, but I think we're on the verge of just presenting what food is actually it's meant to be. It's meant to taste good and meant for you to be brought back to a memory that is, a good memory in your life. So, yeah.
I love that, because actually one of our recent conversations is I think Chef Kerwin was telling us that a good dish takes you back to a memory. And it's so rare that, that is shared. And I think we should emphasize that. And those are the ones that really stand out. Being a head chef and, leading your own team, I always think about some of the young students that come into our school and want to do the same. Yeah. What is your advice to aspiring head chefs?
Don't be mayabang. No, it's actually lead by example. If you believe that you need to show them that you can actually do it before you actually tell them to do it. And the team, actually treat them as your family, treat them with respect. I've learned that the hard way. Now, I used to be one of those angry chefs that yell and scream and throw things and stuff.
I never thought you're so cheerful, but I guess it always changes in the kitchen, right? Okay.
And then, but now that I learned that, if you want people to respect you, you got to respect them first. So,
That's very powerful. If you could have lunch with one person, dead or alive, who would it be?
Culinary wise, I think it would be fun to have lunch or dinner or share a meal with Anthony Bourdain.
That would be a whole day though. I don't think it would just be one meal.
Actually, yeah. Just meal and a few drinks.
Oh, not, yes.
A few is I don't know.
Relative. It's relative.
Yeah.
Huge inspiration.
Okay, for what in your life are you most grateful for?
Most grateful for my two daughters.
They are darling kids.
And yeah, you know, I've never thought that I'd love someone unconditionally. Well, aside from my wife, obviously. But, you know, it's a totally different feeling once you become a dad. Now that you have someone that, you know, relies on you and someone that you need to take care of and, you know, yeah, it's different.
Wow, that is special. I mean, your children, like, I can't imagine when they start getting boyfriends.
What boyfriend? No,
it will not happen ever.
Yeah, I'm going to put them in the Pink Sisters in back home in the Philippines.
Poor girls. I doubt it. Go on, Chef Philip. We're coming to a close, but I think Chef Philip has a few more.
Yep, two questions left. So what is the single best realization you have had during COVID-19?
I realized that I've learned, I need to learn so much with regards to life in particular. Like, you know, I've realized that I've missed a lot of milestones from my children because of, you know, how the kitchen works. You know, it was good to finally be with them for that long. At the same time, I've realized that I've matured because of I'm more patient with regards to my wife. No, just kidding. No,
I think those vice versa too. Most women have to pay
for men. Yeah, vice versa. No.
Yes, yes.
We should ask her the same question.
Yes. it's good because you know that it's unconditional love when people actually, you know, can live together for 24/7.
Oh yeah. What dish makes you happy? What dish makes you happy?
Anything that my wife cooks because she's here at the moment.
Oh,
smart one. And what she cook you then? So what dish? What's the favorite dish she cooks you?
Anything Filipino. So I like her lechado.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which dish?
Machado.
Machado. Oh, brilliant. Okay, last question for me, and congratulations so far on
your
journey. It's fantastic to see you, you know, flying the flag of the Philippines in Melbourne. Congratulations. I know how tough it is leaving your family, leaving your country, and you know, carving out your reputation and name. We're very proud of you. So congratulations. You've come a long way. Thank sure, Jasper, your batchmate is super, super proud of you as well. Yes. So that's cool.
Likewise.
If you could be known for one thing, if you could be known for one thing, what would that be?
I guess my love for our culture. My love for Filipino food and Filipinos in general. I mean, you know, I always look back to where I come from. And, you know, it's still a work in progress, but we're getting there, baby steps, you know, to introduce Filipino food here in Melbourne and hopefully around the world. So I just would like to encourage everyone listening to, you know, do the same. If you're a brilliant chef, or if you are want to be a chef, and you know, if you're Filipino, just, you know, be proud of it, because you should be.
Well, in 2022, I'll be on a plane with our students to come out and do the, I know we have a long history of doing the Melbourne Food Fair. So in 2022, I hope that we can do a nice Filipino promotion and bring our students out to be inspired by you. So just saying, Bay, in 2022, let's get our students out. I know we have a long history with the Melbourne Food Fair and CCA. Yeah. So hopefully we can do a promotion and focus on some cool street food, because that seems to be the trend at the moment. And it's very inspiring to hear your journey. So congratulations and thanks.
Thanks,
for everyone for listening in. And Bea, I'll turn over to you. Thank you. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Chef.
Thank you so much, Chef Migo. I mean, I now understand, when listening to your whole story, the secret sauce is really passion. And there was one more thing that you said, passion and maybe culture or your roots. And I think that's pretty much a combination of, you know, what keeps it spicy and the creative and creativity of a chef, and we're just so appreciative. Hopefully, we used to do food festivals in Melbourne with our chefs, and hopefully in due time, when it is safe to do so, like what Chef Philip is saying, we can do the same with you. And thank you for giving us your time.
Oh, thank you. Very humbled to be part of this.
Thank you for tuning in CCA Manila's first podcast, The Secret Sauce. This is Bea, joined by Chef Philip John Golding. We hope you got excited to learn how to cook and are thinking of what to make next at home for your family, friends, or even your business. If we can ask you a tiny favor, please don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at CCA Manila. And of course, subscribe to our weekly newsletter through cca-manila.edu.ph. Till then, stay inspired in the kitchen.